Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Recovery Radio broadcast recorded live at the Latal Recovery Center in downtown Moscow. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latal Recovery Center located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latalrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can also find them on the web at latalrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affect us all, to make our community aware of the recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experiences, insight, and hope for continuing in recovery.
And I'm going to kick it off here with the January calendar, even though we only have a few days left. Most of these calendar items will go into February as well. I'm not aware of any big changes here. So recovery coaching and peer support online or by phone, you can call to schedule. That happens every day and by appointment. Alcoholics Anonymous, live and on Zoom, is every day at noon. Substance Addiction Support Group is every day except Monday and weekends at 6 p.m. Positive Affirmations, live and on Zoom, is Mondays from 1 to 2. AA Women's Meeting is live at St. Mark's Episcopal Church and available on Zoom through our website. That's Mondays at 7:30. Recovery Peer Volunteer Meeting is the last Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Sexaholics Anonymous meets Monday, Tuesday, and Thursdays from 8:30 to 9:30. Vandal Recovery at the Campus Christian Center on the U of I campus is Tuesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Our monthly Board of Directors meeting is held on the second Tuesday of every month at 4 p.m., and the public is welcome to attend. AA in Potlatch at the Catholic Church at 725 on Spruce Street is Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. Harm Reduction, Safe Syringe Exchange with Supplies are Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 7 or by appointment. Al-Anon, live and on Zoom, is Wednesdays at 1:15. New Volunteer Orientation happens on Wednesdays from 4 to 5. Recovery Radio and KRFB-FM is Thursdays at a little after 1 o'clock. Movie and Game Night is Thursdays now from 5 to 8 p.m. Life Skills, live and on Zoom, is Fridays from 3 to 4. The Vandal Recovery Planning Meeting is Fridays at 4 p.m. All Recovery Meeting, live and on Zoom, is Fridays from 5 to 5:45. And again, Al-Anon, live and on Zoom, is Fridays at 8 p.m. Learn How to Crochet and Calm Your Mind is the fourth Saturday of every month from 10 to 12, and that's a Zoom only. And finally, the Alcoholics Anonymous Sunday Morning Group, which meets at the Campus Christian Center on U of I campus, is Sundays at 9:30, and you can also Zoom in to that as well. And right now, we're getting near the end, we hope, but we're doing a remodel here at the Recovery Center. And so pardon our dust, we're trying to keep all our services and meetings going, but be patient with us, and hopefully we'll have a much better place to work in coming up.
Looks like pretty good progress out there. So
yeah, it does. Yeah. It's coming along nicely. Zoom meetings are accessed by going to our calendar at latarrecoverycenter.org, clicking on the group name, and it will give you all the Zoom information. If you have a problem with that or not familiar with Zoom, just give us a call at 208-883-1045, and somebody will help walk you through the Zoom nightmare. Let's see, announcement. The AIR program, the Artists in Residence program, which is going to start in actually in earnest in March. We're already kicking it off with our call for the Artists in Residence. And the application deadline is going to be February 11th, 2022. For the first residency, the second and third residency deadlines will be ongoing until we get those residencies full, but we encourage you to apply early. The Latar Recovery Center invites artists at all stages of their careers to apply for the Latar Recovery Center's Artists in Residence. The center is a private nonprofit organization serving people who are in recovery from addiction and mental health disorders. The center seeks artists who can aid and amplify the voice for those in recovery. This year, there's going to be three residencies, and they will each span a three-month period, starting in March of this year, 2022, and ending in November. The residencies will include individual solo exhibitions and receptions at the conclusion of each 12-week period. The artist in resident is expected to become familiar with the center and the community it supports, and is encouraged but not required to maintain a regular presence at the center. The center is a partnership between people in recovery, family members, allies, and local organizations who respect the dignity and equality of all people and who are dedicated to promoting healthy communities. During the 12-week residency, the AIR will be expected to engage the community in at least three art-making activities aligned with the AIR's skills and interests and the center's mission. The center will provide a $500 stipend, workspace, materials, and equipment related to the AIR's community art-making activity, a solo exhibition and public reception at the Latar Recovery Center, and press and radio promotion. The center does not provide housing, private studio space, or transportation. And you can get the application instructions online at latarrecoverycenter.org/artist-in-residence. You can just go to the main page, and there's a tab at the top that says Artist in Residence. And if you need more information, you can contact either Amber Peace or myself at Latar Recovery Center. You can email us at announce.latarrecoverycenter@gmail.com, or just give us a call at 208-883-1045. And Denise, you had a couple of things you wanted to mention.
So it's January, and at Real Life Church, there's still Restoration Night. And that is for everything from, you know, addictions to hurts, habits, and hangups. And I just wanted to kind of name off a few of the things that are going on there. You can also go to Lifer, OTP, which is the Real Life site. And you can go to events and registration. I'm going to hit on that. And then go up to menu at the top, and then go to ministries, then down to restoration, and you can find out some information. You can just read about Restoration Night if you'd like. Also, if you scroll down just a little bit, you can go to restoration small groups and hit the search, and it will give you things like that they have divorce care, her journey, men's codependency, men's Genesis process, men's mixed issues, men's step study, there's a newcomers class, resolving everyday conflict is in the main room, so that's for both men and women, welcome home for veterans, that's a men's group, and women's mixed issues, and I'm sure that there's a women's step study and some other things as well. Also, the address for that is 1428 South Blaine Street here in Moscow, and the phone number is 208-882-2484. So if there's anything that I wasn't able to answer a question about, you can just give them a call and they will help you out. Yeah. Cool. All sorts of good things going on there. You know, I feel like they really cover a lot of different areas that whether you're in recovery from drugs and alcohol or mental health issues, you know, there's plenty of things. I'm in recovery for addiction and things, and there's a lot more to life than that original problem, you know, the one where we were drinking too much or using the drugs. You know, there was the stuff that happened before that. So, because we were kids once, right, Johnny?
Right.
We were kids once.
I was.
And we were teenagers. And how old does your wife think you are, matured-wise?
And according to my wife, I'm still a child that needs to be taken care of. And let's not get too deep down that rabbit hole.
We're going to veer back to where we are right now.
That's right. That's right.
And so, who are you?
Who am I? Yeah. I am Radio Johnny, and I am a grateful, recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And who are you?
So I am Denise. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I am as well a grateful recovered addict.
Today we decided that, well, I decided, but Denise is going along with it. Just
I usually do.
Yeah, because she's easy.
I'm agreeable.
To get, easy to get along with that way. We're going to talk about some things that last week. I'll back up. Last week we talked about relapse and, you know, how that can happen and what to do about it if you do relapse. And it occurred to me that, you know, a lot of causes of relapse has to do with nostalgia or what we call euphoric recall, which is basically remembering, you know, the old times when our addictions were maybe in the early stages and before they became,
we lost the farm.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Before things became really problematic for us. I'll kick it off by saying, you know, there are always times I can be talking with an old friend and, you know, oh, do you remember when, you know, we did this or that? And I don't want it to pop into my mind, but it invariably does, was, you know, one of our favorite favorite sayings, it seemed like in those old days, was, let's get all messed up and then ... you know, add your potential tragedy here, illegal activity, just really bad idea, you know, sort of thing. And that was really how I lived my life and with a lot of my friends, because, you know, rarely did anyone say, maybe we ought to think this through to the end. Eating a bunch of psychedelic mushrooms and jumping on your motorcycle
might not be a good choice. Mine was like, this Friday or Saturday night, let's get all that and do this, blah, 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 you know.
Right.
Yeah. Usually a weekend thing is how it started out.
Right, right. And in the AA book, it talks about, you know, not, we don't want to forget the past or close the door on it, because we need to have those points of reference so that we can think about where we were, what we were doing, and what really drove that bad thinking. You know, obviously, whenever you take alcohol or any other drug into your system, you know, it changes your brain chemistry. It changes the way you think. It changes the way you react to situations. And maybe that's a good idea if you're trying to have an open mind. Certainly, we seem to think that smoking a ton of marijuana was, you know, going to open up our minds and free our souls. And for me, it just turned out to be 15 years of self-induced mental retardation, because I didn't grow a lot during that period. Mm. And then drinking the alcohol only to excess, I mean, that was the point from the beginning for me and for most of the friends I had. You know, let's get altered, let's get crazy and do something fun. And I can really count on one hand when things went really well. There was always some element of tragedy involved. You know, whether it was a wrecked car, a wrecked relationship, an intervention by the police, and those sort of things, we don't want to think about. We want to think about the fun times, the good times. You know, that time we cleaned our house to within an inch of the paint coming off the walls. You were relating a story about that.
Sharing before the show that. So first I have to back up and say that. So when I was a teenager and a 20-something, I might go have a couple of drinks with some friends on the weekend and, you know, and that's all fine. Go shoot some pool or something like that. but I didn't really struggle so much with alcoholism. So, you know, those right. that was fun, you know. We'd be like, oh, okay. But we did things like, okay, who's going to be the DD? And we would take turns, and we'd be like all mature about it and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just didn't want to die.
Right.
I mean, I had this, like, super awareness that people get into car accidents when they're drinking and driving, and I guess I kind of thought I was important, so... Right. I was like, okay, I'm not going to die. And you know, and then killing someone else. So thankfully, I somehow had this understanding that that wouldn't be good. And it may have been because car accidents started for me when I was like 8 years old. You know, my mom unfortunately got into some car accidents that were never her fault. So there you go.
Right.
Anyways, and then so fast forwarding to later, you know, past the drinking when things started to kind of go the wrong way with the pain meds and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I could do the pain meds and, you know, clean my entire house for like 4 hours, top to bottom, the walls. Like, you know, you get spots on your walls.
Right.
I'm like something. The kids or in the kitchen, the splatter or whatever. But I could like dust and clean and get rid of cobwebs and make everything clean. And it would just be totally spotless. And I'd just be like, oh, this is so great.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, let's break this into like, we'll do this day and we'll do that day. And, you know, the energy level for just doing that isn't the same. Plus, I'm a little older. But yeah, it was that stuff gave me tons of energy. And it was just so fun to just clean the house.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a little weird, though. You know, I may not really hit home with everybody. I also have a cleaning business for, you know, 10 years as well. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, well, I believe it or not, similarly, you know, when I would get drunk or high, I would my OCD would just jump out.
Right, there it is, OCD.
And my roommates, I can remember one place I lived with five other single guys. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of an animal house, although we're all in our early 20s, but everybody was working. It was pretty stable as far as, you know, finances went and everything. But, you know, people get lazy and they wouldn't do their dishes. And
sure.
I would, you know, get high and just be like, I can't stand it. And I go in and, you know, after like the first 3 months, actually I had a roommate come up and say, hey, when are you going to do the dishes? It's getting kind of full. And we had a chat. We had a pretty serious chat right at that point about the fact that your mom don't live here and I'm not your mom, your mom's surrogate.
Right.
So just because I wash the dishes because I can't stand it doesn't mean it's my obligation.
I want to do it all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but even those things, you know, worked out. And that actually was a place where you know, a lot of my go back to my euphoric recall because, you know, every Friday and Saturday night and occasionally nights during the week, there was something going on there. Big drinking party. I mean, like Halloween parties, New Year's Eve parties, all that stuff. This was a beautiful big house. It was a Eichler design. So it had a huge atrium area, huge, you know, living room, dining room area. And, you know, all glass and just a gorgeous place. And we would just have these big blowouts there all the time. And, plus, we had one of the roommates work for the local cable company. So we had all the,
the shows or like games or whatever.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And cool. We were able to, you know, it's like we'd have parties to watch. We had a breakfast party to watch the movie Alien, which was really a bad idea when you think about it. But, you know, those are the sort of things we did. And a lot of those times, we had really good times. But were people drinking way too much? Were people smoking way too much? Were people doing other drugs? Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of those people I know now hit really bad spots in their life because of that. Not because of those instances necessarily, but because that behavior was encouraged.
More rather than less, yeah.
Right, encouraged in our group. And we used to do crazy things like go out and climb water towers. In the area we lived in, we had these huge water reservoirs that, not like the water towers we have around here where they're, you know, 100 feet up in the air on stilts. These were, in the hills around the area I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. And there were just these huge round tanks with, you know, curved tops, and there were different designs of them. And somebody decided at one point it would be fun to climb up on top of it in the summertime when it was warm and go sit up there and smoke weed and look at the stars. So we started doing that. Then it became a thing. And totally illegal. You know, we had to trespass to get on the land where the water tower was. Then we had to figure out how to get around the locking mechanisms, you know, to climb up on the top of it. All of which took some fairly brilliant engineering to be able to do it without destroying anything. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there was the fear factor of being caught, you know, by the police and cited and probably arrested, because we're talking back in the days where you could get 10 years for a joint. It was a serious thing, but I think that was part of the thrill of it too.
Sure.
You know, what made it, quote, fun?
Mm-hmm.
It was all that dangerous, crazy stuff that we did that was, quote, fun.
And today that would just sound exhausting.
Right. It would be like, why in the, you know,
yeah,
isn't
no, I'm
there?
Good. Can I get a blanket on my couch and we'll just rent a movie?
Right.
Oh, I just made a really good dinner or something. Yeah.
Right.
But then when we were younger, that was fun.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
Oh, yeah. Burning up that energy. I mean, I can tell you how many times we used to go up there. We had this favorite place, Lumsden Bridge Campground, which was right on the Tuolumne River, about 20 miles west of Yosemite. Beautiful area, beautiful. Down in this canyon, in the summertime, it would get hotter than Hades. And at the night, it would be like 72 degrees all night long. And it was a remote place, so there wasn't really any worry about the police coming around. It was 20 miles down this really rickety, bad logging road. So, you know, there were times where we just had the whole place to ourselves during the week. It would maybe fill up on the weekends, but fishing, you know, just hanging out, doing whatever we wanted. And, I think of all the things that we did down there that I could have absolutely done not being high or not being drunk.
Sure, I was going to say, it all sounds beautiful and everything, you know?
Yeah, and the weird part is since I've gotten sober, I haven't been back there. Well, I've been in Idaho for 20 years, so it's not a three-hour drive like it used to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have friends who in sobriety have gone back down there and just, hey, it was everything we thought it was, but actually a lot more. Mm-hmm. Because we just kind of overlooked,
when the
priority is let's get high and then go fishing, or let's get high and build a big bonfire, or let's get high and cook a bunch of deep fried Twinkies or whatever it was we did when we were up there. It was all pretty insane. But that it can be that good again. And that euphoric recall tends to make me think that, well, maybe those times weren't all that bad. But the reality is, from the time I quit drinking, you know, when I got to that point where the wheels came off and there was no fun about the way I was drinking, there was nothing fun or enjoyable. It was all bad memories, bad events, bad things happening. I can go back to those euphoric times and say, wow, I wish I could recreate that. I wish my drinking could be just like that, or that I could smoke pot and just have the good time like I used to. The problem is my disease has progressed to a point where that's literally no longer possible. It's just physically, chemically, brain chemistry, no longer possible. Because I would overshoot that couple of beers on a Friday night and go straight to a fifth of vodka to try and get to that place, which I would always overshoot in the end. And that's the danger of, you know, that euphoric recall.
Sure.
But the good part, it's not just that I am forgetting, although I have a built-in forgetter. I've heard a lot of people in recovery say that. I might forget exactly all the bad things, because you really don't want to remember all the bad things. But you want to remember all the good things. So I got to be very careful to look at those good times and say, yeah, it was fun, it was great, but wouldn't it have been just as much fun or just as great if I hadn't been high or passing out drunk at the same time? And that's true, because I do things now. Absolutely. That are exactly, well, I don't climb water towers anymore, mainly because the ones around here are scary as hell. And my irrational fear of heights doesn't help that. But going fishing, I can have a good time going fishing.
Me too.
Drink coffee or you know, and eat a sandwich and
absolutely
sit there and drown worms and, you know, stare at the sky and watch the ospreys and the eagles flying around. And it's great. It's perfect. And I have to remember that it's okay to feel that way about it. Mm-hmm. You alluded to, and I hope you expand on, the idea that in our recovery, we're not just learning how not to drink or use drugs. We're learning how to live a reasonably happy life.
Absolutely. I mean, today I do things that are just as fun as I used to do then. It's just different. I'm also older, you know, mm-hmm. and matured and things like that. But I mean, I have friends and real conversations that have depth and people that I can be vulnerable with and stuff. And I don't have to wear the mask or drink or use the pills to be happy anymore. And again, I mean, I agree with you about, it's not like I could go chop up an OC and snort it and then expect that I would just do it that one time and then never want it again. I mean,
right.
I certainly don't want to go back to that. That would be dangerous completely.
Right.
But, I mean, going fishing and doing all these things sober now, it's great. I think, if anything, altering would seem awkward. Being mind altered would seem awkward to me now, because I've lived this last 8 years doing things this way, and it feels good. It feels really good.
Right. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. You talk about it being awkward. I would even define it as uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Knowing what I know now about
right.
who I am. Mm-hmm. And what I've become in sobriety, yeah, being high would just kind of be, you know, probably make me nervous, mm-hmm. you know, just uncomfortable, yeah, awkward.
Yeah.
Again, you know, one of the joys of having worked at my sobriety for a couple of decades is that feeling of being, that euphoria that comes along with getting high, can actually be created just by getting together and talking with good friends, mm-hmm. and, you know, relating funny things that go on in life. I love listening to comedians on, like, iHeartRadio when I'm doing my cleaning job. You know, I plug in the earphones and I just zone out and polish your porcelain. I am the king of porcelain.
We have that in common. We both have some cleaning gigs.
That's right. That's right. I think it's
makes good money. It's fine.
I think it's good for recovery, because you have to be where your hands are. You know,
yeah.
You got to pay attention.
And you can listen to stuff while you're doing it. I mean, whatever it is that you want to listen to, you can listen to it.
But I can listen to these comedians on the radio, and the ones that aren't constantly telling penis jokes. The ones that are actually zoned in on, you know, just watching people, observational humor.
Yeah, actual funny stuff.
It cracks me up, and I laugh harder than I ever did on, you know, cheap weed, you know, where everything's funny, even stuff that's not funny. And that's a weird thing, too. We used to get really high. The Monty Python, we used to get high, and it was like a Wednesday evening thing. We'd get high and watch like a half hour of Monty Python and just, you know, laugh our asses off. Thought it was funny as hell. I've rewatched all those episodes in sobriety.
Oh, no, they weren't funny?
Not as funny.
Not
Certainly
as funny.
Not as funny as I remembered them
yeah.
being.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, still humorous, but not something I
fall
would
fall out of your chair and
right,
laugh funny.
Right. Not,
yeah.
not something that I would block an hour out on a week,
right,
you
right.
know, to watch. So I remember it being great, but when I try and relive it,
it's just not the same.
You
know, well, I was going to say one other thing that this conversation makes me think of is just that my priorities are different. What I want in life and stuff is just different. It just is. There's a maturity that's come from being sober, I'm sure.
Yeah, and why don't we take a little break here, and then we'll come back and talk about how we've matured and basically just grown into sobriety. And we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to KRFP, the coolest station in the nation, 90.3 on your FM dial.
Okay. Wait a minute. Give me a break a second. Two, three,
four.
One, two, three, one, a two, a one, two, three. Something's wrong. There's something here that doesn't last too long. Maybe I shouldn't think of you as mine. Seeing you or seeing anything as much as I granted that you're always there. I take for granted that you just don't care. Sometimes I can't help seeing all the way through. Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 in beautiful Moscow Pullman area. And I'm Radio Johnny, and she's Denise, and we're talking about nostalgia and recovery and euphoric recall, trying to remember the good old times. But I think it's time to shift gears and talk about our experience. And our strength was the fact that we both got into recovery and have made recovery the priority in our lives at this point. And the sort of things that go along with that, emotional maturity, mm-hmm. is a big one. And also fiscal maturity and mm-hmm. all those other things. And we were talking while we were off air. It was great, wild, and crazy times. You know, didn't think too much about tomorrow or down the road. Saving for the future, what's that all about? Besides the fact that, you know, every spare penny I had went into either getting liquor or dope or something.
Yeah, I mean, these things are expensive, I got to tell you. If you got a habit of drinking or drugs, it gets expensive.
Right, sorry, right.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it's not just acquiring the drink or the drug. Sometimes there's lawyers involved and courts and fines. Mm-hmm. And do I buy a pound of weed to sell and make some money off it? Or do I pay my rent this week? Those were
real questions. Those were real questions. Yeah.
Real questions. Yeah. And it was, you know, real easy for me to answer.
And so I hope if you're listening and you've never gotten into this, you know, drugs or alcohol or stupid choices thing, that you realize that it's not something to check out just for fun, because it's really not.
Yeah.
Just keep moving forward in your life, man. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and we were talking about things like, you know, I didn't get sober until early 40s. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any savings. I didn't have, I had retirement, which of course I cashed in for some really foolish things, vacation trips and stuff like that, because it was all about, you know, living in the now.
Well, and it sounds to me like you were able to hold down a job for a lot of the time that you were an alcoholic.
I did. It wasn't until probably about the last 4 or 5 years that I really became unemployable.
And you were saying before that you started drinking when you were a teenager?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just trying to kind of give a picture of, like, since we're talking about, like, maturity and stuff like that and finances.
Right. And as far as my emotional maturity, I mean, that pretty much ended with the drinking and drugging that I did as a teenager. I mean, emotionally, I was probably a 15-year-old pretty much through my 20s and 30s. So I didn't really consider other people's feelings. And also, you know, it was all about me. I mean, basically, that's what it is. I was selfish and self-centered. And as long as I got mine, it was up to you to get yours. And the only thing that saved me from absolute financial ruin is a partner who just basically wouldn't let that happen.
Yeah.
You know, my wife took over the checkbook and the money spending and putting priorities on things, and saved me from myself in that sense. But it didn't change the way I looked at things, you know. And when I finally did get sober, boy, I had a bunch of learning lessons to be done, a lot of maturing to do, a lot of, you know, I had to actually put other people first. And I had to actually do things like think about retirement, as I was only 20 years away from a retirement date and had no retirement savings. I mean, we were talking about how young people, nice, healthy, well-adjusted young people now, you know, they're getting out of college, starting jobs, and they're starting 401ks. You know, they're going to retire millionaires, which who knows what that's going to look like in 40 years. Yep. But I mean, they're going to be able to retire at a decent age where they still have the energy and the wherewithal to do things that they want to do in retirement. That was not something I thought about. It was literally live fast, die young, and leave a good-looking corpse. Well, that didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And as far as leaving a good-looking corpse from this point, no, closed casket. Actually, I'm going Colonel Cinder.
Oh, whatever.
Going Colonel Cinders, bake and shake, just out into the wind, to dust.
I was positive that you were, okay, I gotcha. Yes. Yeah, it is actually pretty expensive these days to get buried in the ground as a whole thing.
Yeah. And they do it. They bury you standing up now to save room in the cemetery. Yeah,
never
heard
of that.
Oh, yeah. It's twisted. It's just wrong.
So they're putting the Cassadan down. Are you sure about this?
Yeah. A lot never of places.
Heard about this.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. It's a new thing.
Yeah.
Because usually they used to just stack people. Like you could get like a husband, wife, one, you know, plot or whatever.
Boy, there's another argument. Who's on top?
Well, the first one that dies is in deeper.
Oh, there you go. That would make
sense.
Yeah,
that's how that works. Yeah. That's, you know.
Yeah.
But it seems like the only thing that's pretty affordable is to get cremated. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was a little strange, but I've been accepting it as an option these days.
That's right. That's right. Well, on another happy note, but I mean, those are things I didn't think of. And I have yet to do a will, which is kind of insane, because if my wife and I were snuffed out in a car accident tomorrow,
the government gets your money, huh?
Yeah, the state of Idaho would get it all, and that's just wrong. You know, basically, they get enough out of me every year. Besides, I want my money to go to, a little bit to go to the recovery center and a lot of it to go to, animal rescue.
There you go.
You got to take care of those dogs that the students leave behind because they can't take them home with them. Mm-hmm. And that's all part of the maturity that I did not have for many, many years. And I look back on it, and do I regret it? Yeah, to a certain amount. But the reality is, now that I've basically got my life back, and my brain is functioning way better than it did, I was able to get myself into a job where there was respect for the employees and employees' stock retirement program. And I managed to hold my tongue as long as I could before I left. And I'm okay now. That's been a 25-year journey. And for somebody who's just into recovery or just starting to learn how to live their life differently again, that may seem just totally out of reach. But given time and actually working those 12 steps, or whatever program you're in, listening to a counselor or going to restoration night and working out those things that happened, like you said earlier, before
all the drugs and alcohol and whatever.
Right, exactly.
Pick your tragedy.
Right, right. Your unfortunate events, whether you were abused as a child through, sexual abuse, or you were emotionally abused, or the churches that tell you God's gonna make you burn.
Spiritual abuse.
Spiritual abuse.
Yeah, if you've experienced spiritual abuse, which is something that people go to our church because they've experienced, and go to restoration because they've experienced that.
Right.
And it's interesting because I didn't go to church a whole bunch as a youngster, and I didn't go as a teenager. I didn't really know what that meant until people came in and started sharing about it, and I started having some friends, and I get it now. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
That makes sense. Glad you're here, kind of a thing. It's real stuff, boy. Lots of things that can happen with that. So.
Right. And I have found in my program of recovery.
Not how God intended it to be.
No. I found out in my program of recovery that says in the book that Dr. Silkwood said when talking about Bill and Bob and his experience with them, he said that it seems that for the alcoholic of the hopeless variety, one that even the best medical minds in the 30s could not seem to cure of their alcoholic problem, as he put it, they needed to have a complete psychic change. And that term, psychic change, was medical speak for some sort of spiritual experience.
Yeah.
And that's what I found through my program of recovery. And I find it's not all that different for people that go through a program through a religious organization like yours, or counseling. I think most counselors have finally figured out that once you get past the brain chemistry and once you deal with the physical side of the addiction, there's more that has to happen there. In AA, we talk about it as a spiritual awakening, which indicates there's still more work to be done.
Sure.
And for me, that's been a real good thing because it means I can experience that spiritual awakening and then grow from that at a pace I can handle, which might sound weird to some people, but not everybody has a burning bush type experience
where
everything's given to them up front and they can accept it and embrace it.
Everybody's journey is different. It's just like if you were starting out newly in recovery and the things that we talk about like financially or job-wise. I mean, sometimes putting your pieces back together, start out with like maybe working on getting a child back or trying to reconcile in a marriage. Or it could be that you need to get a job. That could be the first thing you need to do. There's so many different kinds of things that need to be done. But I think that because we're all human and we need each other and we need people and we need community and someone to talk to and other people to hear what's going on in their lives. I mean, that to me seems like part of why it doesn't matter necessarily as far as like your belief spiritually. It can be what is right for you. But just getting in community with people and getting out of isolation and those kinds of things so that the healing can begin, you know, so you can start picking back up the pieces.
Right, exactly.
Because we're meant to be, you know, we're meant to be around other people and we're meant to be engaging with them and working on things.
Well, and in AA, we talk about, they use the word God a lot, you know, mm-hmm. the G word. And for people who don't have a relationship with a higher power, sometimes God can be a good acronym for a group of drunks mm-hmm. or good mm-hmm. orderly direction. And I know a lot of people who work the steps in their own way, not necessarily as described in the book, but their spiritual awakening occurred in those meetings mm-hmm. and they embraced that group of drunks as their higher power. It's their accountability, their place where they can come and ask questions and get answers that are truly relative to what's going on in their life, because other people have that lived experience. Mm-hmm. Not unusual, or not totally unlike people who use biblical references on how to live their life. There's a lot of great parables in the Bible that can teach you how to live a healthy, happy life. And not to discount any of that. It's not necessarily my path to recovery, but it's part of my path. I mean, I don't throw anyone's belief system out the window just because I might not agree with the type of songs they sing at the beginning of a service or,
sure.
you know, some sort of weird dogma, you know, stand up, kneel down, stand up, kneel down. It doesn't mean there isn't things there that I can use as part of my recovery. So it's important to find your own path and then do whatever you can to incorporate whatever else works for you.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're starting over again and you're coming into recovery, I mean, everything's kind of new and you're trying to figure out how to live and what you think is right for you. Which way are you led?
Right, exactly.
And it's an ongoing situation as you're learning more and more. And yeah, it's a journey.
Yeah.
I don't think there's an arrival spot. It's a journey. So,
there's no finish line in recovery.
Yeah, no, it's just an ongoing thing, just thus as life is, honestly. I mean, yeah. We don't just wake up one morning and we're like, all right, this is the official gold star of your life right now. I mean, there are definitely things that are really great that happen.
Sure.
Obviously. We all experience those, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the promises they talk about in the book, where we can actually be happy, joyous, and free, and whatever that means to you.
Yeah.
And that's why I decided to get involved with the Latar Recovery Center. Their basic tenets are you're in recovery when you say you're in recovery, and you choose your path in recovery, and we'll do everything we possibly can to help you along that path.
Right, exactly.
But you get to figure that out for yourself.
Yeah.
We'll show you some options.
Right. Doesn't usually work well for people to be told that they only have one way to go. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it can, but isn't a one-size-fits-all thing. So.
No. It never is. And that's one of the joyous things I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. When they talk about God, they talk about a God of your understanding. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not a only Allah or only the Christian God or Jesus or any other necessarily prescribed belief system.
And I think that's kind of one of the things that's important too, is to remember that you're there working on your recovery and not worrying about whether or not it's the same as someone else's.
I mean, that's right.
Leaving a space to understand that being respectful of other people's beliefs is important.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think that's a good spot to end the show in. It's been good listening to myself talk.
I mean, it's good to have a meeting where you get to share stuff, huh?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And I probably share way too much, but we'll let the law figure that out.
Yay.
Pretty sure trespassing goes away after 7 years. So, plus I didn't name names of my co-conspirators. Conspiracy is always a good one. Anyway, so thanks, Denise, today for another great show, and hopefully I've got a couple feelers out for some guests coming
Excellent.
Up. We're looking forward to maybe having some folks from Cougs for Recovery, which is a program that's going on over at WSU, in case the name didn't fool it for you. And we'll be back and do it again.
Thanks for joining us.
And remember, if you think you have a problem with drugs or alcohol or a mental health issue, you do.
Sing us, play, how we cheered for more.